TV critic David Bianculli has noticed yet another developmental step in the history of the TV laugh track, and to him, it's no laughing matter.
As much as I love comedy, that's how much I hate laugh tracks. The only thing I hate worse than a laugh track on a funny show is a laugh track on an unfunny show. Or so I thought, until I found something I hate even more. More on that in a minute. But first, this quick history of the laugh track, and how and why it came to haunt TV in the first place. As far as I can tell, it's the fault of one guy, Ed Wynn. Most people think of Ed Wynn mainly as a vaudeville performer in the early 20th century, but he was also a media pioneer. In 1949, he starred in The Ed Wynn Show, the first TV series to come out of Hollywood. In 1956, he took another big gamble and played a dramatic role in a Playhouse 90 production that's still remembered as a true TV classic, Requiem for a Heavyweight. But earlier in his career, Ed Wynn was a radio pioneer, too. All the way back in 1922, just 2 years after the first radio station was established, Wynn starred in the medium's first stage show, a production of The Perfect Fool. He was so worried, though, about performing his comedy routines just for the radio microphones, he grabbed everyone who was within reach, secretaries, stagehands, even station executives, who were famous for their lack of sense of humor, and had them act as his studio audience. Because he was insecure, he secured his place in laugh track history. That was the first time studio laughter became part of the equation, and it's never left. On TV, there have been several phases of the laugh track, and each one has been less honest and more annoying than the one before it. First, there was the studio audience for a live program, the Ed Wynn type, only bigger. When you watched your show of shows in the early 50s, whatever laughter you heard was coming from real people who were laughing at the same things you were. Then came I Love Lucy, where the laughter was recorded, but still real. But slowly but surely, when less funny shows came along, TV invented the canned laugh track, where the sounds of people laughing at something else, something funnier, were inserted in post-production to make those jokes sound less awful. In the 70s, the feel-good Norman Lear sitcoms added a new wrinkle to laugh tracks, the sensitive ooh sounds, where studio audiences were heard to ooh and ah sympathetically to a warm episode-ending hug. Pretty soon, these too were recorded and dispensed freely all over the place, like bootleg tapes from a Grateful Dead concert. Married with Children was the next major development. For this show, the studio audience was encouraged to whoop and holler at every opportunity. Whenever Christina Applegate's sexy character of Kelly entered, wearing one of her micro miniskirts, the audience howled. Not as in laughter, as in coyote. But now there's a whole new deadly strain of laugh track out there. I found it on Pauly, that horrible Pauly Shore sitcom that's so bad, even Fox came to its senses and canceled it after just a few airings. But the damage has been done. Listen to this dialogue between Pauly and other characters, and pay particular attention to the sounds coming from the audience.
If you want, Becca, I got two words for you. Cyber sex. You see, Pauly, interactive is the future. I can build you a virtual Becca right here.
Cyber sex is so low. It's so impersonal. Wow, are those 3D?
Downloading smut again.
Hey, not so fast. Print me another naked Brad Pitt.
I couldn't place those sounds for a while, but I finally did. When anyone makes a juvenile remark on Pauly, which is almost all the time, the sound you hear from the audience is the sound of a bunch of preteens going down a roller coaster ride. It's a woo track. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Disney and Universal were recording those screams at their respective theme parks, then selling them to Fox to use on their sitcoms. Pauly is gone. The woo track, though, is bound to return. Just watch and listen.
David Bianculli is TV critic for the New York Daily News and the author of The Dictionary of Teleliteracy.